The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Hello and welcome to Climate Crisis. We are lucky to live on a diverse and beautiful planet, and our future generations deserve the same. But climate change is jeopardizing our way of life and our planet's future. As a researcher, I am convinced that climate change is real and it is a major threat to life on our planet. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 9 of Climate Crisis. We heard from a student's perspective on climate change in the previous episode, and today we will hear from a different perspective. Our guest today is an evolutionary ecologist and a science professor at Dominican University of California. His lab specializes in amphibian and reptile disease ecology, microbial ecology, and immunogenetics. Let's welcome our guest, Dr. Obed Hernandez Gomez. Hello, Dr. Gomez, and thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So as you know, this 10 series podcast is about climate change. So my first question to you is, how do you feel about climate change? Do you believe that it is real?
Yeah, I think like many people your age, I'm very concerned about climate change. I do think it's real. I think you can't deny the data. As a scientist myself, I've seen its effects right on my own organisms as well. So definitely it's something that I take and think about every day. And sometimes I feel a little bit negative about it, pessimistic. And other times I wake up feeling like we can do the change as well.
Do you agree with the 99% of scientists that climate change is caused by us humans?
Well, I mean, the data is pretty hard to ignore in attributing humans to climate change, specifically because of the fact that we see tremendous spikes in temperature associated with carbon dioxide in our atmosphere that corresponds with the industrialization that has been generated by humans, so definitely.
Yeah, so climate change does affect humans and also animals. What effects are climate change having on biodiversity, and why is it really important for us to save the biodiversity on our planet?
Biodiversity is definitely being affected, and I think climate change can affect biodiversity in a place in many ways. It can have a positive effect because it's going to cause organisms to move and shift their ranges. So that definitely is going to influence the distribution of organisms in the environment, and certainly make it so that some places see a loss of diversity and other places might see a gain. That being said, is we don't know how those changes are going to influence the delicate ecosystems, right, that are already being affected by climate change themselves. So I definitely think that it's going to influence specifically a lot of animals that depend on climate patterns or on weather patterns in order to make decisions as to when they breed or when they move. And yeah, so I think that they will be the most affected, unfortunately.
So in your lab, I know that you study salamanders, and your work was also featured in NBC Bay Area segment Climate in Crisis. Can you talk a little bit about that, and like, what did you see in your research?
Yeah, so my lab has been looking at, let me give you a little history on it. We've been studying salamanders here in the Bay Area since 2018. Mm-hmm. And several of the sites that we have studied have been hit by wildfires, right? It's unfortunate that we go to some of these sites and we no longer find salamanders anymore because the fire was so intense. But the silver lining of this is that now we can look at how the fires is going to influence these populations, because we can now have a pinpoint, right? We have a longitudinal study where we can go back in a year, 2 years after the fire, and evaluate how the populations are rebounding. Mm-hmm. Also how it's affecting disease. So that's what NBC Bay Area was really interested in looking at. It's asking us, like, what's the purpose of sampling after a fire? What is to compare, right, to the past? Mm-hmm. And then take it as a natural experiment, a natural opportunity to continue to monitor these populations and see what the long-term effect of fires is. Because the effect of climate change on wildfires in California is that it's making them more intense and more frequent. right? So you can expect these populations have evolved a certain frequency of fires, now having an increased frequency of fires that they have to deal with. So can they adapt? Can they not? We don't know. Right? So whether the state's going to invest in saving them matters, not answering that question.
Did you see any major differences in the salamander population size before and after the fires?
I think the more intense the fire was, the harder it was to find salamanders after. So that's another thing that we saw, varying degrees of intensity. What I mean by that is how much biomass was left over after the fire. So there were some sites where no biomass is left over. Mm-hmm. There are sites where some biomass is left over. So those sites that suffered the biggest loss of biomass is where we saw the most dramatic absence of animals. But surprisingly, in other sites, they did survive because they go underground and the fire wasn't high enough to bake them that low underground. Mm-hmm. So they survived. The issue there is, well, if there's reduced habitat, right, if they come out of underground and then there's reduced biomass, is now there's a higher density of salamanders under whatever biomass there is available, and then they can spread disease that way. So that's another thing we're really interested in tracking disease. And that's what you and other people in the lab are doing right now. And we're starting to get results on that aspect of things. But yeah, mostly the places that were affected by heaviest had the was harder for us to find more salamanders.
Also, I know that OHG Labs also works with turtles and other amphibians and reptiles. Do those species get affected by climate change?
I think one of the climate-related events that we've seen lately is big turtle mortalities because of the ponds drying up. So we're getting less rain, right? And that's associated with climate change. Mm-hmm. And that's causing some of these ponds to dry out, and they run out of food. They run out of, I mean, these are pond turtles, they're aquatic, and they overheat and die. So we have seen mortalities associated with desiccation. Whether those events are more frequent now compared to before, we don't know, because we don't have that information, but we are tracking several populations since 2020 in the Bay Area. So hopefully over the long term, we might be able to answer those questions.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, as a professor, do you think schools are doing enough to have classes, like course materials that teach students about climate change, and what should they do to get more students thinking about climate change?
That's a good point. I think we can do a little bit more here, especially here, because here we have a lot of issues related to climate change, because we're going to have like parts of the Bay Area that are going to flood. And those parts of the Bay Area that are going to flood are also parts where a lot of populations of minorities and you know, and people who are low socioeconomic background come from. So I think kind of focusing some of the resources, I guess, on teaching students about the local issues and how to come up with solutions could be a creative way to get them interested in climate change.
As a professor, did you find out any opinions of students about like how they feel about climate change? Do all students agree that climate change is happening? Are they worried about it? What are their thoughts on climate change?
I think most of my students are concerned about it and very worried about it. I think it's something about the current generation that they're starting to realize that the inaction of the previous one has really screwed them over and stolen their future. So they're starting to fight back. So I think I feel very happy to know that the current generation is very, very concerned about it. But at the same time, it's kind of late in taking action for some of the things that we need to prevent. So it's going to be interesting to see how, as the baby boomers kind of retire and we start taking over, how we're going to start taking actions. I hope that's enough.
Do you believe science will be able to tackle the problem of climate change?
I don't think science can tackle it alone. I think we need policy. And in order to get policy enacted, we need the public to get involved and to get more interested in calling their senators, right, and their representatives. And I think COVID's a perfect example, right? Because like we can have all the science in the world, but still the people who make the decisions, if they don't have access to that science, whether it's willful ignorance or just ignorance, then we can't do anything. So I think, yeah, working on educating the public is huge.
Do you think governments are doing enough?
No, absolutely not, because they're fighting, they're in the middle. Mm-hmm. they have to balance, right? Keeping their job, at least the people who are in charge in government. Yeah, keeping their job and doing the right thing. So many times I think in that compromise, a lot of the important things that we need to address just get put in the back burner, like climate change.
Moving on to like solutions of climate change, can you talk a bit about like biological technologies like gene editing and CRISPR and how they can be useful?
Yeah, well, I think one of the biological ways that people are thinking of, or people are tackling this, is the carbon fixation, right? And sort of finding sustainable ways of generating energy. So I think that's where CRISPR can be used, because you can then, I guess, modify organisms that are better at incorporating carbon and maybe do a better job maybe at creating starches or some other type of molecule, right? That's pretty long and it has a lot of carbon in it. So I think that would be one way that you can use these new biology technologies. But I think a lot of the breakthroughs are going to be more on the engineering side and figuring out ways to either sequester carbon, remove it from the environment, or find other ways to transport and get energy. Good time to be a physicist.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Also, do you think government is spending enough on funding research on climate change, and why research is really important?
I don't think I have the expertise to say that, or if I know, right, how much the government spends on climate change research. I mean, you can always spend more money on the work. I think what I would suggest if I was making these decisions as to who gets funding is I would give out or make sure that both the finding the carbon sequestration solutions, the carbon capture solutions, are being funded, but then also, as I was mentioning earlier, the social science to understand like why people make decisions they do and how is it that we can change them.
Also, is the government paying enough attention to what the scientists are saying?
I think they pay attention, but I just think they don't listen, or they just don't make the right decision when it comes to make it. Because I mean, I read Barack Obama's latest biography where he's going over his time in the White House. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he is obviously aware, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things that he talks about is just like having to make deals with people who are climate deniers, and knowing, right, that our country is very diverse, and because of that, there's all these opinions out there, and you have to make all these people happy in order to get things done. So I think in the compromise is where you lose a lot of things, because I think they know, but they got to compromise with the other side, unfortunately, and I think that's what limits their decisions. So I just wish it wasn't a compromise. I wish it wasn't political, right? That both sides would say, no, this is a existential issue for our species that we need to tackle. If that was the case, then it wouldn't be an issue, right? But unfortunately, it's been made into that, so both sides have to work together. I guess the way the government works, unless we get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, we don't have any power to do any change, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government really has to start working with climate change. But as individuals, what can we do in our daily life that can help with climate change?
Yeah, I think the best thing I can say there is don't think that one person's actions are very little. I can think of buying an electric car, you can, right? Trying to do your laundry at the right time of day when the demand is not high. But maybe also thinking of other ways, like buying your clothes from a thrift store instead of buying new clothes, shopping local, because there's also a lot of hidden carbon, right, in a lot of food that is brought from thousands of miles away. So there's a lot of tiny little actions that you can do. So I guess the best thing you can do first is calculate your carbon footprint and then look at ways that are sustainable for you and reasonable to do your part, because they add up, right, at the end of the day.
Do you think if we act now, we can fix climate change in the future?
I think it's pretty late to do some of the changes. I think we can, if we act now, we can make the effects less bad, if it makes sense. Because I think we're past the point, at least most of the models predict that we're past the point where we're gonna reverse course. But we are still in time to limit how much carbon is being emitted into the atmosphere. So I think a lot about this too, right, in terms of how I live my life, because the thing that I've chosen to do is that most of my research is local. Like, mm-hmm. we don't go to the tropics to collect samples because we don't want to add to the problem. Mm-hmm. So that's another way that I kind of see that kind of have changed my life, right, to address these goals. Because I do worry, right, about the future of the planet and of the species and biodiversity and all those things. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Gomez. Do you have any last tips, comments?
I guess, again, just reiterate, you know, look at your carbon footprint and then just figure out ways you can help.
Well, thank you again. And thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 9 of Climate Crisis. Be sure to tune in to episode 10.